Good morning. It's 11:23 a.m. Sunday, the 22nd of March, 2020. Phew. So, yeah, as we're still doing Novelrama, we're in day three. I got 7,000 words yesterday, which made up the sum of the words I was missing. It's short about 2250 on Friday. I only got about 4,000 words. I was like seven words short of 4,000. And I needed 6250 to hit the goal for the day, and I missed it. Yesterday, 7,000 brought me up to 11. I needed 12,500. So I was a little bit short there. Morning. So I'm a little bit short there. If I get 7,000 today, that's 7 and 7 is 14. 4. That's 18. I need 18,750 to hit today's goal. I need to see what that number would look like compared to what I have now at 13,400. Today is 3,400 at the moment. So, we'll see. We'll see how it works. If I can get to 18,750 today, I can claim a win on the third peak. There are four peaks that you could potentially win. I lost the first two peaks already, but I'm still in the running for peak number three. And even if I fall a few words short today, I'm making it up tomorrow. Monday is an open day. I don't have a lot to worry about outside of the house tomorrow, except trying to get out and do the walk. So we'll see how that works out. I can still bring it in at 25,000. Fingers crossed. Hi. So Dan Thompson asked me a question in email, and I sent him an answer, and he asked if I would talk about it on the morning walk. And I said, probably not, but the more I think about it, the more I think I ought to talk about it. It has to do with delivery at a distance. It has to do with all the people who are now trying to deal with homeschooling. And the absolute stupidity of the majority of school districts. That's probably not fair. It's probably not stupidity. It's probably just ignorance. I've said this before on a podcast. I will say it again now within context. Substituting video conferencing for classroom education is taking the worst of two modes without gaining the advantage of either. The problem with synchronous is that everybody has to be in the same place at the same time doing the same thing. The problem with doing it in video is that only one person can speak at a time. Guess who that person is? I guarantee you, it's not the student. It's the teacher. Now, there's a rationale for doing that way in the classroom. In a classroom, only one person can speak at a time. And the teacher does call on students to ask questions, answer questions, offer commentary. So there is a conversational aspect to in the room. Oh, crap. I must have tied it to Granny knot this morning. My boot's untied. I'm going to tie it because I've got long laces potentially tripping me, and that would not be good. Okay, square knot. To continue my rant, in a classroom there's some justification for it, but in the classroom there's a lot going on besides what's happening at the front of the room. And that's the part the teachers want to close their heads to. They want to close their eyes to. They don't want to hear about the accidental learning that happens in a classroom, because they can't control it, because it's not on the syllabus, because it's not the approved knowledge. And they can't test it. Now, the question is whether or not they can assess anyway. That's a whole nother rant. But the driving theory in distance circles, I hesitate to call it distance education, but, and I'll get to that in a minute. The driving theory is equivalency theory, so that the theory holds, supposes, posits, whatever word you want to use, that classes offered via modes other than classroom need to have an equivalent aspect to them to satisfy the need for that exists and is satisfied by classroom instruction. And teachers focus on, okay, they have to be able to hear my lecture, get my content, demonstrate some amount of mastery of it, and give that demonstration to me. So in its simplest form, they have to be able to read what I write, they have to be able to answer my questions, they have to be able to give those questions to me so that I can assess them, grade them, and give them feedback on their responses. So that's the basic educational cycle. I give you a piece of knowledge, you repeat it back to me in some form or another. The deeper the knowledge, the more complex the learning, the more difficult that assessment becomes. Blink of lights and all. So that's the cycle. Hear my words, regurgitate my words, let me tell you how well you understand my words. And the less regurgitation, the more processing, the more engagement you get, the more confident you can be as a teacher that you've actually educated the student in some aspect of some knowledge domain. So here's the problem when classroom teachers go online. And I saw it over and over and over and over again. I saw it in 1998 when I took my first distance education course and had the teacher stand up in front of me and say, yeah, online teaching is, online courses are terrible. The dropout rate is 75%. Students report feeling isolated. We're not doing a very good job. And I'm like, wait a minute. How can you be isolated online? How can you feel isolated online? How can you be in a class that's online and feel isolated? So I went up to her afterwards and I said, this flies in the face of my lived experience. We didn't use those terms back in 98, but 20 years ago. God, it's been that long. So, show me, can I get some, I'm just a master student, I don't know what I'm doing. Tell me, can you give me some references? Can you point me in the direction? So I went and I did some studying. I did some research. Went to the library, I looked up the journal articles. She had several. There were some in the book, and she just pointed to them and said, yeah, go look these up, they'll tell you. So I went through and I did the analysis. I looked at the study, and I went back to her and I said, all right, well, I suspect that the first thing you need to do is stop designing classes that isolate students. She looked at me like, what? I said, these classes all work on the assumption that the only person in the class is the student. And the only thing the student has to do is pay attention to what the teacher says and give them back the exact thing that they're looking for. So yeah, of course it's isolating. It has nothing to do with a classroom. The equivalency theory here completely breaks down all the accidental learning, all the incidental learning, all of the stuff that happens in a classroom experience does not exist here. Except the teacher is controlling the class, and the class has a narrow channel with which to communicate with the teacher. So yeah, you're designing courses that isolate students. It should come as no surprise to you that they're working as they were designed. And I will never forget the look on her face. She said, well, what are we supposed to do? And I said, well, to begin with, consider all of the things that happen. When somebody comes to a class, what do? They walk across campus, they meet their friends, they say hello, they see other students in the hallways, they know who's in their class, they can look around and see, you know, who's the cute kid sitting next to you, or who's the smelly guy in the corner, or, oh, get ready, sit with me, monk post. So all that stuff helps forge connections to the college, to the class, to their cohort. All of those things happen outside of when the teacher opens his mouth or her mouth. And she's like, yeah? I said, none of these courses are designed that way. Even our course. You can't, if you log onto one of our learning systems now, you can't even see who else is in your course. You see who you are. You see who the teacher is. You don't have any idea who else is there. You can't talk to them. You can't speak to them. You can't communicate with them because you don't know who they are. You've isolated the student. The student-teacher connection is the only one that exists. All of these courses are designed for that student-teacher connection. Only that student-teacher connection. One-dimensional, completely cut off from the rest of the world. Why does it surprise you that students find them to be isolating? Well, yes, but we have to have time on task. Well, okay, have time on task. But time on task, the exclusion of everything else, is only time on class. It's only time on task. It doesn't actually generate the kind of interaction, the kind of educational experience that students would normally encounter if they're in the classroom. And she had this look on my face, like, on her face, like, okay, what would you have us do? And I went away for about 3 days and came back and gave her a prototype class, put together from bits and pieces from here and there, the free internet, back when there was a lot more free internet. So there were discussion boards, and there were drop boxes, and there were email addresses, and there were rosters, and there wasn't a grading list. They had to have, the teacher had to make his own spreadsheet. But all of the aspects of a modern learner management system, and please don't call them learning management systems, because they're not there to learn it, to manage learning. They're there to manage learners. Let's be clear on that. So all the aspects, chat room, discussion board, opportunities for the teacher to put their content onto the website so people could see it when they had a chance to see it. I really downplayed the automated PowerPoint bullshit. But they liked that, so she wanted one of those. It didn't do really a whole lot of good. Back in those days, the people with high bandwidth lived on campus. Everybody else was on dial-up, and that was the problems with that became evident rather soon. So we had everybody sign in. We had everybody log in online. We had everybody go to the chat room. We had a class in a chat room. And she kept trying to control the class. She kept saying, well, put an exclamation point if you have a comment, a question mark, if you have... And I'm going, no. If you have something to say, say it. Type it out. Hit enter. We'll all see it. And she said, well, this is going to be chaos. I'm like, no. There's no reason in text chat to have one person talk at a time. Because the chat's not going to go away. The words aren't going to be garbled by somebody else. The statements will interleave. There will be multiple conversations happening at the same time. Everybody will be a party to all of those conversations at the same time. And for the first few sessions, yeah, people are going to be a little bit... We didn't use WTF in the day, but that's really the thing. It's like, what the fuck? How is this going to work? How can this possibly work? Because we are so inured to the reality that only one person can speak at a time because people have such narrow focus bandwidth that they can't actually follow two conversations that happen at once. And audio channels, yeah, that's true, but it's not because they can't comprehend them, it's because they can't tease the statements apart. When you have three people talking on top of each other, you can't really pick out what each of them is saying, because as soon as you focus on one, you lose the other two. In chat, that doesn't happen. It only happens in the very beginning. It only happens with people who have not done things like play massively multiplayer online role-playing games. Yeah, that was easy for me to say. No, it wasn't. So by going with synchronous, they automatically give up all the value of async. And by going to video, they give up the value of text by forcing everybody into voice. Voice is the slowest of all the communication channels. I don't care how fast or how slow you type, voice is the slowest. You may only type 10 words a minute, voice is slower. Why? Because if you only type 10 words a minute, you only type the 10 words that matter. If you're on voice, you ramble, like I am, rambling. Voice is the slowest way to get a particular point across to any given person, unless and until you've taken the time to figure out what it is exactly you want to say in the fewest words possible. And in video chat, nobody does that. Be real. Even the teacher doesn't do that. They're not working off a script. They're working off a syllabus in the seat of their pants, just like they do in a classroom. There's nothing wrong with it in a classroom. In video, no. The other thing about video is a video is not the same as a classroom. I notice it mostly when I'm on a video chat because CIFWA has board meetings in video chat. You're looking at the screen. You're not looking at the students. Because when the students look at the screen, they see you looking at the screen. They don't see you looking at them. They see you reading off your notes. It's the moral equivalent. You know, a teacher who stands up in front, puts their notes on the podium, and then reads their notes. They're not talking to the class. The class knows that. The class feels that. The dynamic is wrong. It's completely wrong. And the challenge is to get the teacher to realize that they need to stop looking at the students and start staring at the camera. And I can't do it. I know that I'm supposed to be doing it, and I can't do it. I've had the training. I can't do it. Because video is the weakest of all possible links. It requires the most in terms of technological infrastructure. It requires a computer that can handle a camera. It requires a connection that can handle the bandwidth needed to deliver video and audio and text all at once. A lot of people have those kinds of connections, but it's not universal, not by a long shot. In Tom's class that I did last week, five of the people were on their phones. They had no video at all. They just had the audio on their phones. Morning. Good morning. So, yeah. I'm really not surprised at the response, because every administration in the world wants to replace their classroom structures with video conferencing. And it's probably the worst choice in a universe of bad choices. However, I am at the back gate tomorrow is another day, and with any luck at all, I will talk to you then.